You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
The Haka Party Incident, a film documentary, launched across cinemas in Aotearoa yesterday. On May 1st, 1979, a group of young Māori and Pacifica activists, He Toa, confronted a gathering of University of Auckland engineering students as they rehearsed their annual mock haka. Following director Katie Wolfe's play of the same name, which travelled the country on a highly successful national tour from 2021, the documentary uses archival and contemporary interviews with people directly involved in the incident, along with guests reflecting on the significance and impact this had on the relationship between Māori and Pākehā. Sophia had a kōrero with writer, director and producer of the film, Katie Wolfe, about this largely forgotten piece of history and her filmmaking process.
Ko Katie Wolfe Ahau, he uri no Taranaki, ko Ngāti Mutunga Ngāti Tama, oku iwi. My name is Katie Wolfe. I am a filmmaker, theatre maker in Aotearoa and the writer, director, producer of the Haka Party Incident.
And for those who don't know what the Haka Party Incident was, and I guess to kind of introduce this documentary, would you be able to briefly speak as to what happened?
Sure. And I take great delight in telling you what happened because I'm sitting at what I call the scene of the crime.
Yeah.
I'm here at, you know, in the BFM studios in at Auckland University, Te Wānanga o Tāmaki. So in 1979, there was the annual, I guess, capping week, which was the 1st of May, and the engineering department, which is directly across the road there, had this tradition where the engineers would dress up in grass skirts, you know, get all gathered together, probably crack a keg, just run riot around the university, perform haka. Then they'd go on these downtown and all down Queen Street, you know, breaking into the mayor's office, you know, things like dares and stunts like that.
Mm.
This was a tradition that was started way back, probably, I think, post-World War One.
Wow.
And it had just sort of been part of the traditions of the engineering department. The Māori at the university had for many years been saying, look, can you guys just stop this? Because it's really, the haka had got completely out of control. There was a real sort of, in the 70s, more of a party atmosphere happening. It was a lot of, there's a big drinking culture right throughout New Zealand, and these complaints from Māori to say, come on, we can't really be doing the haka while you're drunk and, you know, writing rude words on your body. It just was met with deaf ears, and particularly by the, you know, the leadership here in this university. Interestingly enough, you know, in the engineering department at the time, there were no women, which is extraordinary to think about.
Mm.
There were no Māori in the department. And so they all came together early in the morning to get their skirts on, to have a bit of a practice before heading out into the day. And a group of Māori activists and Pacifica activists from South Auckland, very, very organised group, came into the university to say, confront the engineers and say, you've got to stop doing this.
Mm.
They entered the room, a 3-minute fracas broke out. And from that, there was a, you know, the members of the activists were charged with really serious crimes. There was a landmark court case. There was, you know, there was a human rights sort of investigation at governmental level. But it sort of broke open this idea that we have, I guess, what we call systemic racism within the institutions in Aotearoa, and how in the 1970s, it was sort of like we looked at that for the first time.
Mm.
So it was a really huge day, but interestingly enough, straight after the Haka Party incident, it was forgotten. It was kind of tucked away and forgotten in New Zealand history.
Yeah. In 2021, your play, The Haka Party Incident, opened at Auckland's ASB Waterfront Theatre. And I remember going to see it, actually.
Oh, cool.
I had an incredible history teacher in high school, and I'm pretty sure I was speaking to my co-worker just before, and he was like, oh, no, we actually had the Haka Party incident as our, like, unfamiliar text thing for history in our exams in level 2 or 3 or something. But,
mm-hmm.
yeah, my teacher took us to go see it afterwards, and it was so good, and it really stood out to me. But anyway, the play had incredible success on its national tour, and I think really, as you say, spoke to an event that became a bit of a lesser known part of our history, and mm-hmm. not a lot of people know about it that well. What kind of led you to want to continue the conversation about the Haka Party incident through this form of documentary?
Because the play, of course, is a documentary play, verbatim theatre. And I guess in making the theatre work as a documentary, I really am enjoying the genre of documentary. I work a lot in narrative filmmaking, narrative TV, narrative theatre. And so when I started making the piece of verbatim theatre, which, as you say, really had a connection, in making verbatim theatre, you film the people that you are featuring in the documentary. This is for the actors to study them because they represent them on stage. I knew that every time I was bringing out the cameras and filming people, that it was probably going to end up being a film documentary. So I was very conscious as I was filming, even though it was a very sort of organic, ad hoc process sometimes, that I was creating a cinema palette, I guess, for the film. And I didn't know, you know, if I'd ever get round to it. Of course, making the play was incredibly protracted because of our dear friend COVID. And so, you know, the play got shut down in 20, and we shut down again in 21, and then we managed to get it up at the end of the year. And then the national tour was shut down, and we managed to get the national tour back up in 23. So it was just this process that just went on and on. However, as you know, as that time was there, I found more people to interview. You know that whole sort of thing, someone will talk to someone and they say, oh, someone's doing a documentary, and they might get in touch. And you know, it was so that sort of challenge really added to the play, and hence I got more and more interviews. And then of course in the big lockdown of 2021, I think, here in Auckland, I teamed up with an editor friend of mine, and I just would zip around to her place every day. And during that lockdown, we did the first cut of the film.
Wow. I guess to kind of add on to that, what was your kind of first approach when you decided to make this documentary? How did you kind of begin this process?
So the very first thing I had to do was find he taua. And so I met with Hilda and Hune Haruira. I met them here down on Queen Street. And I spoke to them about wanting to do this project, and just talked to them about, you know, their work, them getting to know me, what I was aiming to do. Hilda and Hune are spoken to all the time in the media. Their work is so extensive. So I think it was a little unusual for them to be approached about a theatre project, so they were kind of interested in that. Then I was able to, from them, get hold of a wahine tour, Miriyama Rohihi Ness. Now, Miriyama was very much behind the organisation of the Whina Land March in 75. And so she's always been a really strong political organiser. And I met with Miriyama and said that I was really keen to interview he taua. And she said, leave it with me. So we came back with a date, and we booked Waipapa Marae. And I brought in my cameraman, and we just sat there and waited, and we didn't know who was going to turn up. It was like this incredible day where anything could have happened. And anyway, these cars start rolling into the marae, and there was Hune and Hilda and Georgina and Zena, all that you see in the documentary. They all came together for that very first interview. And as Miriyama's now passed, Zena's now passed, Georgina's now passed. So we've lost a lot of those voices in those very few years. So And as you know from seeing the documentary, those interviews, which are so candid and lively,
yeah.
were the beginning of, and really important that they were interviewed all together.
Yeah.
Because you really saw the dynamics in the movement. Yeah, so that was really the, that was a really strong starting point. It wasn't for another 2 years that I was able to interview the engineers. That,
wow.
that took much longer to bring them together. They were very nervous about speaking on camera, and that was just a process of meeting them, getting to know them, and then we interviewed them across the road here at the actual engineering department in 21.
You've definitely spoken to it quite a bit there, but I am keen to kind of continue that conversation there, because something I thought was really deeply interesting about the film was being able to hear from both Hitoa and the engineering students. And you've included 27 people, I believe it is, who were directly involved in the event. And they, through these interviews, they tell the story. And I think that's such a beautiful way of presenting it. But I guess, what was your approach for picking those people? I mean, there were clearly obvious people that you wanted to bring in, but I guess maybe some of the less obvious people to pick. What was your approach for that and including those voices?
It was really organic, because as I say, I didn't know who in Hitoa would come forward to speak. I also, with the engineers, it really was, though the four that I interviewed were really, they were the only four that were really prepared to speak on camera. I did have contact with others, but they were just too nervous to do so. But for, I decided very early on that, you know, if you wanted to be part of the documentary, you had to have been there. Like, it's like, if you were there on the day and whatever it was, you know, we've got David Merritt, who was the Crackham editor at the time, and, like, Kathy McRae, first-year student who walked into the quad and the meeting changed her life. Now, that was, you know, Kathy is actually a colleague of mine. She's a director as well. And, you know, that was just, she heard that I was doing this project. And, you know, it's very, this is very typical in New Zealand. I get this email going, oh, my gosh, I was there that day. And I'm like, Kathy, I'm coming to interview you.
Yeah.
So it was, but it just was got kind of crazy in terms of, like, the people who are in the documentary. As you say, there's more people in the play, there's less in the film, just because some of the interviews I have are not film, they're actually just audio interviews. But people like Sian Elias, who was represented Hitoa, you know, these really eminent, you know, New Zealanders who happened to be part of this day. So it really was, there was no, because it's sort of, this is sort of a self-made film as well. You know, I was sort of producing and, you know, the sole producing the project. It was terribly organic. It was just, if an opportunity came, I would follow that. And so it was very, very, very organic. And because I was discovering the story, it wasn't like there was a book I could go to and, you know, read all these accounts, and that I was unearthing a lot of stuff. And in terms of, you know, discovering, like, wonderful things like Ian Neal, the photographer who took the very famous photo of Hilda in the quad standing up to the engineers in 78.
Yeah.
He now lives in Thailand, and I managed to track him down.
Oh, wow.
And he sent me, he still had the original, you know, haka sheets that they learnt the haka from, and which, you know, they would, you know, were you could see were typed out, and they're just filled with mistakes and funny things. You know, they're quite crazy. But things like that were, you know, when I was able to, when people were sending me those things, I was able to ascertain what the haka were that they were performing, because people couldn't remember. It was really interesting. Like, that sort of knowledge had been sort of lost. Like, no one in the engineering department could remember what the haka was. The Auckland University doesn't recognise those haka.
Right.
The engineering department have just written their new haka, which you see in the film. They're learning for the opening of their new building. So those things had been lost. So when Ian sent me that song sheet, I was like, oh, so it was kamate, and it was akaranna. So this haka written by Tarangi Hiro, who's Ngāti Mutunga, same iwi as me, which was a, you know, another huge coincidence. You know, and how did that that haka akarana, which was the Auckland University haka, how did that get forgotten as well? So there was lots of, I guess I didn't really consciously go out to find things. I just let things find me. Mm. Like, was very, very open. And if any opportunity came, just kept following.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bouncing ball.
Wow. Mm. Yeah, and I think, like, an underlying conversation that kind of runs throughout the documentary is this idea of the Māori Renaissance.
Mm.
And I guess I wanted to ask, like, how does the film and this event speak to and highlight progress in contemporary Aotearoa, looking at it now?
Well, there's this moment in, we see, it's two things actually. Coming out of South Auckland at that time, where Hilda and, Ben Dalton had been to this incredible college called Hillary College.
Mm.
And, you know, it was this incredibly progressive place where the students were really encouraged to actually partake in activism in terms of being able to learn their Māori language and actually advocating for rights for Māori in this new urban environment.
Mm.
And so I think that, you know, then of course Ben Dalton, who features so much in the documentary, a lot of the initial play and film was written from his incredible archive.
Mm.
And they were, you know, every meeting they had was beautifully minuted. So you can see, you know, the Waitangi Action Committee, you can see that there was just so much political organisation back then. You know, and of course now Ben is the CEO of the Waitangi Treaty Grounds, and you see him standing at Waitangi like last year.
Mm.
You know, him and Hone directly speaking to the coalition government. So that line, you know, literally that line between 79 and now is very clearly clearly drawn.
Yeah,
there is, and probably one of the saddest moments in the film for me is when right at the end, you know, it was a very contentious pai pai at Waitangi last year. I was there. It was electric. It was absolutely, there was so much going on with the, you know, the Treaty Principles Bill,
mm.
you know, coming at us.
Mm.
And the attitudes that Mr. David Seymour is putting forth. He was very, very challenged on the ātea.
Mm.
A lot of heated words back. And there's this moment, which you see in the film, where when Ben is closing the proceedings on the ātea, where he does say, you know, we've still got a long way to go. We're not quite speaking each other's language yet.
Mm.
And I found that really, you know, when I first saw that, when I was going through the footage, very moving, because, you know, these people have been working their whole lives,
mm.
you know, progressing Māori rights, and in many ways we've made huge, huge steps, but there are prevailing attitudes that do keep circling round.
Mm.
So there is a lot of, I think, these he toa especially, I see them as being very heroic figures,
mm.
in terms of the ka whawhai tonu mātou, the continual struggle that goes on. And we've seen it this year in terms of the hikoi,
mm.
you know, that it's actually really positive in a way that New Zealand, we sit in the context of world politics, that, you know, that fighting for the rights of Indigenous cultures is something that goes on and on. And we in New Zealand, you know, if we feel like we're going a bit off course, you know, where our voices still were incredibly strong.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
But as I said to you before when I came in, that it's really, I love coming into the campus,
mm.
because, of course, this is where it happened.
Yeah.
And
It's crazy.
Yeah, I know, right? It must be so interesting.
So weird.
Yeah. There's going to be a screening for students when students come back on the 24th.
Good.
And so I hope it's a story that students really engage in, because there's so much, as I said to you, you know, those incredible images and footage of the quad meeting, you know, 3,000 people, you
mm.
know, between 2 and 3, I don't know, something, it's hard to really gauge how many people there were who came to that meeting, and that went on for hours, like it was just hours and hours and hours, tens of people spoke. and this art of, I guess, public speaking discourse, which it seems very antiquated now, but is such an important forum for, as I was just saying, you know, the art here at Waitangi, where people get to stand and speak, and people hear arguments from both sides, and that we're able to hold different arguments. And I think it's very important in this day and age where we have sort of become consumed by media in terms of the digital space, the social media, where we're actually getting less and less skilled at holding diverse arguments. So I think, you know, I think, you know, for students here, I think it, I'd really be interested to you know, to really engage with how they respond to the film, and how it inspires them in terms of what university is. Yeah, so I just wanted to say, you know, it's really fantastic to be here today, and what an, you know, I think it's a story that, you know, Auckland University should really celebrate, you know. It's a really incredible thing that happened here, because there was such a fantastic outcome in terms of the haka was never done again, and everyone, the way it was dealt with, I think was, and the people involved in it were, you know, made a difference in New Zealand society, and continue to do so.
That was Sophia speaking to writer, director and producer of the Haka Party incident film, Katie Wolfe. The Haka Party incident is now showing in cinemas across Aotearoa. If you want to hear more from Katie Wolfe about the film, there is also a Q&A on the 6th of February, Waitangi Day, at Matakana Cinemas.
Yes, darling, but is it art?
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.